Title of the message is Blazing a Path to Christ. We are in Isaiah 40, 1 through 11, and we lit the candle of peace. Comfort, comfort, my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, and the rugged places a plain. The glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. A voice cries, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry? All the people are like grass, and all their faithfulness is like the flowers of the field. The grass withereth, and the flowers fall, because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. You who bring good news to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good news to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up, do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and he rules with a mighty arm. See, his rewards is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms. He gathers them close to his heart. He who gently holds those that have young. This week, I traveled many places, but I ended up in Messina, New York, in the way upper part of New York. And when I get loaded there, I load aluminum logs, but whatever that is, I travel down along the St. Lawrence Seaway on the U.S. side. And oftentimes I have looked across the water and there is Canada. And I often wonder if nature really recognizes the dividing line. Does the water know that it is a difference? Do the trees know that there's a difference across the water? I wonder if the birds who fly back and forth across the sea know the difference. Does the air give its passport before blowing across the water into Canada? Or do the officers say to them, to the air, you cannot enter because of your pollution baggage? Do the fish know where the border line is in the water? Do they line up in a row of rocks? And does each side defend the other? Do they build massive factories that produce arms of endless wars defending the line of rocks? Who draws the lines on the land and the water? Who says this is my land and this is yours? We do. People do. One of the beginning verses of Isaiah 40, 1 and 2 says that Jerusalem has fulfilled, her service has been completed. I will start off here because now, today, this week, Jerusalem is recognized as the capital of Israel. There's a movement. My idea about Israel and Jerusalem is that their service has been completed. Various different translations say this in various different ways in this particular place. But my understanding is that most prophecy is pointing to the coming of Christ. And that the Abrahamic covenant, or the one part of it, is fulfilled. And when Jesus comes, the use of the Jewish nation to bring about Christ. They have been blessed as a nation. And so their service is coming complete. This is an arguable issue in which Christ says there is no dividing lines no more. There is no nations. His love and his will circumvent everything and go across the globe. So there is no dividing line of nations that says that this nation is only has Christ and that nation has Hinduism, and that dividing line, the love of Christ flows around the globe. And so I see that at the end, as the end of Jerusalem. There is no need for, in your theology, a coming or looking towards Jerusalem for the end of the age. I tend to say that it's completed, done, and for geopolitics, if you want to have Israel in your group of nations, of democracies, that's okay. I don't have no qualms about that. But as far as your theology, I think you should see it as ended, and that part of the Abrahamic covenant has been completed. Is this what it's talking about here? Well, if you take it literally in which Isaiah is talking about, it was talking about during the time a temple was destroyed for the first time, and they were beginning to come back together, and they were going to, he is prophesying the coming or the rebuilding of the temple, in which it was built and stood until 70 years after Christ, and then it was destroyed again. So my problem with going into a lot of prophecy in the Old Testament is my mind tends to wander around a lot, and it wants to go all over the place, and I'm not really quite sure how to take a lot of prophecy. Do I move it away from Israel and take it to the church, or do I let it within Israel and let it prophesy out to the events, upcoming events, up to Christ? Then there's those who flip it over even into another future event again. I'm not one who does that. So I started out with a little bit of a story that says there's no boundaries, no borders in which Christ operates across the globe. That's a total new idea in which Christ brought about. Now, whether or not you think that way or not. So we'll start at the beginning. Comfort, comfort my people, he says. So do I see that as something that speaks to us today? Or do I see that speaking as something that Isaiah is saying to the children of Israel? It depends on where you stand, what you think, where your theology is. I can roll that over into speaking to me personally and say, comfort, comfort God to me. I can look at it inwardly within myself. I don't have any problem with that. And I don't have any problem with it speaking to Israel. And I don't have a problem with it speaking to the coming of Christ. My problem is when people roll it over into a future event and the rebuilding of the temple and what is happening in the world today. I have a problem with that. I don't think the Bible quite speaks in that direction that far. And I think it... So then I go down and I read, her hard service has been completed. Well, it's talking about Israel's time in which they were not in Jerusalem, in which they had no temple, and they were in captivity. And so they're going to come out of that, and so their service for... or their punishment for their sins has been completed. That is what Isaiah is saying in the most literal sense in which the text is. Yes?
Did Israel ever have a country before they were given it after the Second World War?
Yeah, they had it during David's time. When Joshua went in and claimed it, and then they set up a kingdom. They had the whole kingdom when David, Solomon and David were there. It's
the same place?
It's the same place, yes. Yeah. And where the temple was built, which is now destroyed, is where Abraham had sacrificed his son. I think that's correct. Is that not correct? That's where how I understand the event. When Abraham went from the land of whatever he went to, and he, you know, God says, okay, get yourself up and go to the land in which I'm going to tell you. And so he went there, and the way I understand history of the Bible is that's where Abraham attempted to sacrifice his son, and that was the Temple Mount in which David built the temple. David and King Solomon built the temple. That's that Temple Mount, which they are all fighting over now, and which is a mosque on it now. And so...
History, but I forgot it all.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah, it's easy to do.
Yeah, that mountain there, Mount Moriah there, Isaac was going to be sacrificed.
Yes.
But the Lord said, I will prepare myself a sacrifice.
Yes.
That's where he died, and he died for our sins, and that's Wow.
Some say that is true.
I mean, but as far as Israel, as far as the Jews coming in and taking over the capital of Jerusalem and stuff, it'd be like if some nation came to us and said, we're going to take over Washington, D.C., because long before the Indians were here, 2,000 years ago, this land was given to us. So we're going to take over Washington, D.C., and it's going to be our capital now. And we're going to kill all of you, and we're going to take this land. I mean, that's 2,000 years is a long time.
Yeah.
To say, well, that's our land for 2,000 years.
Well, from 70 years after Christ, the destruction of the temple, that's when it was pretty much done away with. 1948, when they came back again.
Yeah.
But they make a claim of that land through the Abrahamic covenant.
Yeah.
And so they're going to kick everybody out, and they're going to take it over.
But it's almost 2,000 years.
Yeah. See, I'm saying that promise has been completed.
Yeah, I believe
now,
it.
Huh? You believe it? Yeah, I believe that has been completed. But if your theology rolls over into a future event hinged on the rebuilding of the temple, which is a large segment of Christianity believes that, then you believe that that's going to move over again into another future time. But I don't believe that. Because in order to have that in your theology, you are denying Christ. In my perspective, if you tie your theology and the end times to the rebuilding of the temple, you are denying Christ.
Of course, the Muslims.
Huh?
The Muslims don't believe in Christ anyway, so they don't believe in Christ.
So if they're gonna wipe off that mosque, well, you know what's gonna happen. But they're getting very close to doing it. I have this feeling that they're gonna get close to doing it. So. If you believe in that theology, at some point in time, that has to happen. And supposedly, the blocks of the temple are already cut out, waiting for, I mean, it'd just be a matter of a few, whatever. They're already cut and prepared, the way I understand. These are people, and they have to have a red heifer to sanctify the temple, and they had a problem with the red heifer. That's another whole story. But they raised it over in the United States. In order to ship it, they had to cut its ears, and that made it unclean. And so they had to raise a red heifer in Israel in order to purify the temples. All this stuff is real and happening today. I mean, if you think I'm making it up, just study it. It's there, and it's right there in front of your face. It's happening today. And we laugh about it and think it's funny, but it's not. It's a very serious, because it's tied to our political decisions that we make in the United States. The evangelicals have a hard pull on what happens in the decisions the United States is making. And to me, I think it's a very serious thing. It's not all that laughable and silly, because it's real.
It'll start a war.
Yeah.
It's going to be more in the news, because a lot of countries don't believe that Jerusalem is the capital, at least yet.
Yeah.
The United States, well, the president declared that we were moving the embassy to Jerusalem. The rest
we were
of the world
recognizing
faced Tel Aviv as the capital.
Yeah, we were recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. That's what we did this week. It's going to take some time to do whatever we're going to do. But
by we,
the United States. We are United States. You are United States, so am I. Whether we agree with it or not, we are United States.
There ain't no reason the other side can't claim the other half.
What?
There ain't no reason the Muslims can't claim the other half.
Well, the problem with the Jewish theology and Muslim theology, redemption and harmony with God comes with ownership of the land. So in order to have a complete restoration with God, Yahweh, their God of Israel, or Muhammad, they have to own that particular land. And that's where the problem comes in.
You have to make two cities out of it.
Well, that's not going to solve anything either, I don't think. So they're going to divide the city up. I don't see that. I just think if I was to make at this point, I would say that sooner or later they're just going to wipe the Palestinians out, and there's not going to be any more. That's an Old Testament way of dealing with things. That's what I think is going to happen.
That's what we did to the Native Americans.
Yeah, we did the same thing. We're guilty of the same thing. That's how we as humans deal with it. An idea or people, we just wipe them out. It's sad but true. So. I'm spending a lot more time here than I thought I was going to.
That happens.
That happens. But that's okay. It is important, because we think sometimes some of the stuff that I say up here or that you hear is just blah, blah, blah out there, but it's reality. I'm telling you, it's reality in this world. And so I see it as an end. But I think what Isaiah is trying to say to the people of Israel, that your time of suffering is over. You have suffered enough, and you are going to go back into the back into your land and reclaim your land. Then we go to verse 3. A voice that is crying out, one crying out, in the wilderness, prepare a way. Well, I understand wilderness and the way and desert and mountain and hills, probably somewhat different. Not different, I think, but just something a little different. We are in our physical way, we are living in the wilderness. We are separated from God in a sense in which we live in the wilderness. You can associate that story with the children of Israel who wandered in the land of the wilderness, in the wilderness. And so there is crying out of the way. The way is the New Testament way of saying what Jesus taught. This is probably where the word came from. The way was considered to be not a Christian idea. You know, we call it Christianity now, but it really was called the way. The disciples taught the way. That's what it was called. It was capitalized, W. And so the way is a voice crying out in the distance into a land over, way over there, like across the hollering and saying, hey, over here, follow this way. So that's how I see this verse working out. Make straight in the desert a highway. A desert to me is your mind. In biblical sense, we are arid in our minds. We need to be watered by the Spirit of God. This is an idea that flows through the Bible. You have to do a little digging and studying. But the desert is our minds and our hearts. They're dried up. They need to be watered and refreshed. And so he's hollering across the holler at us into our minds and saying, hey, wake up over there, you dried up bunch of minds. And this is, follow, you know, hear me. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill be made low, and on and on and on. Are we to think that God is a bulldozer and he's going to bulldozer the earth and make it all flat? Is that what he's telling us? That everything's going to be made level and all that? No. These are ideas and thoughts that work in, that build up. We have heard of lawyers and what have, we're ramping up this idea. I mean, I've heard that this week used. We're ramping up. Everybody understand that idea? They ramp up an idea. What that means is you're pushing up the idea and raising it up. You're developing the idea. When you ramp up an idea, you have a hill. Eventually, you have a hill. So you have a larger than just, it's a larger idea. Then you have a mountain, which raises up even more yet. And then you put life on top of it, and you have light on top of it. A light on a hill, on and on, that song, that verse, it's in Isaiah. So, every one of us have ramped up ideas, we have a hill of an idea, and we have mountains of ideas in which we accept as being true, and there we live. So you get the picture? We have this mountain that we live upon, each one of us. Now, Connie and I went to a workshop out in Bethany College at one time, the first one we went to, and there we talked about this idea of mountains and hills, and people are trying to actually think whether or not it's just one mountain, or it's a mountain range, or multiple mountain ranges. So these are ideas that people are literally talking about and thinking about. These are college level workshops that we went to that time. I thought it was very good. Some people only make it halfway up the mountain, but that's another whole subject. But that's what he's talking about. So we're supposed to, what I say is, Isaiah's trying to say is, there's going to be a new way of thinking. You're going to have, things are going to change. The mountains are going to shift and all this kind of stuff. The way you think is going to just be totally turned upside down. That's what I think he's trying to say. And our rough areas and all this kind of stuff are going to be made level, not in the sense that we're all going to think the same and it's all going to, it's portraying an idea, a concept. And we are to clear our minds So we're supposed to make a highway for God. So we're supposed to open this route in which God can speak to us. Not be closed off and live up on top of our little mountain like a little hermit. We are supposed to clear a pathway in which Christ can, this new idea can come. We're supposed to have open minds and accepting minds. That's a pathway. There's a lot of us, you know people who are so narrow-minded that they couldn't create a pathway if they tried. That's what it means. You're not supposed to be a narrow-minded person. You're supposed to open up your mind and create a pathway so God can speak to you, a highway through your, into your desert, into your mind, into your heart. And that's what I think he's saying. God is not a bulldozer. Ramp up, okay, yep, we got that. And we live on top of the mountain. Every one of us have it. Verse 6, a voice. This voice that I'm saying, that I say is hollering out across the holler at you, is crying out. And Isaiah says, well, what should I cry? I don't know what to cry. I mean, I'm a human being. I don't know what to cry. Why am I supposed to cry? He says, all people are like grass. And all their faithfulness is like a flower in the field. And on it says. What I've taken out of that is, life is beautiful. The flower is beautiful. The grass is beautiful. We are beautiful. There's no question about it. Well, I guess some laughs out of that one. I'm sure. We are different. We are, but we are, huh?
The next sentence is, the grass withers and the flower fades.
Well, I haven't got to that part yet. I'm first, only working on the beauty of us. I don't want to beat us all down to we're nothing but trash that to be swept away. It's not saying that. It's saying that the grass is beautiful and the flower is caring us to flower. It has a season. But we're beautiful. We are beautiful. Come on. I mean, you look around, I travel around and see people. I shake my head. I don't understand. But they're beautiful. I mean, humans are beautiful. We are, if you see them as beautiful flowers, look around here. Everybody's dressed different. No one has the same clothes on. No one looks the same. We're beautiful. So he's saying, yes, we are beautiful, but as a flower and a grass, we dry up and we get old. We get old. I'm sorry to say, yep. We get old and dumpy. And somehow we don't think it's as beautiful as what we are, but we still are beautiful.
Yeah, I'm at that age now, I'm almost 66, where everything I look at, whoa, I see a miracle, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Except for when I look in the mirror.
You have to be willing to accept yourself as part of it, too. Yeah. It is true. Life is a miracle. It really is. It's really a wonderful thing when you think about it. But it only lasts. We only last for a short time. We only have a short view of things. We only have 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, some people less. So in this whole section, he's trying to tell us that we see in the short term. We only see life in the short term. We only see a short little narrow event. That's it. God sees in the bigger picture. He sees in the long term. We don't. That's where faith and all that comes in. So he said, even though we are very beautiful, we're only going to live here a short time. So he's going to cry out to us, supposed to cry out to people that, look, there's something better coming. There's a better way of coming down the path. And you got to realize that Isaiah was 600 some years before Christ. And now we're still reading this and applying this words of wisdom to our lives today. So it wasn't like someone after Christ is crying all this stuff out. It was before Christ. Crying up. And no matter what you think about Jesus, Jesus changed the world. I don't care. It doesn't matter. He added a dimension of thought that has yet to be exceeded. The love of humanity, do we practice it in the way that it should be? No. Do we live it? No. But the highest concepts of living life to the fullest was brought to this world by Jesus and taught to us. I am totally convinced of that. So he said, you who bring the good news to Zion, go up to the high mountain. I'll stop there for a second. I see Zion, and I know there's some people in here who are going to disagree with me. I know one person for sure that has a little difficulty with me. Zion and Jerusalem are two different places. Zion resides above Jerusalem. It's a spiritual spot in which God resides in each one of us. That's where I see Zion. Sometimes it's compared to Jerusalem. Sometimes it's not. Depends on how you read the text and how you look at it. But I see Zion and Jerusalem as two separate places. All of us have a Zion place in our heads and our hearts where God resides. We may not, and built within our, the temple is within us now. So we have a temple and we have a Zion. That's how I see it. It lies, it's a spiritual realm in which exists above us and around us and through us all over. That's how I see it. So who will bring the good news to Zion? Who will go up on the high mountain? Here is a high mountain. High mountain is a high spiritual realm in which, you know, if you look around at all civilizations, they all build pyramids that try to get up to the sky. They all see a high mountain. I mean, many places went to a high mountain or they built a pyramid. So we were always trying to get, by going up, we were trying to get to God, the Tower of Babel, trying to reach God. We try to build these, I forget what the word is, that reach up.
Skyscrapers.
There's another word that's, I can't say, it almost came. Yes, okay.
Ladder.
Huh? A ladder? What's that with an S? I don't know. Anyway, it's an older term that's used. I think it starts with an S. That's the only thing that comes to my head.
The only thing I think of is that ziggurat.
A ziggurat is a Z, yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. sometimes I go places where I've never intended to go with a message, and that way I have to try to recall these things, and sometimes it's difficult. So a ziggurat. We have been building them up for a long time. So this is a picture of what prophecy does. You go up to a high mountain, and there you communicate with God. Mount out in the desert, where Moses went up. Here again, Sinai Mountain. Moses went up into the mountain in order to find God. That's an illustration of we go up, you know, and this is supposed to be true history where Moses went up to the mountain. So he says, who's going to go up there and bring the good news to Jerusalem? Lift up your voice and do not be afraid, and on. And then it says at the end of verse 9, here is your God. Also, what happens in a lot of prophecy is that we Christianize it. We make it speak to the Christian today. I sigh. Because that's a difficult thing for me. This passage is fairly easy. I can pretty much relate it along the way. But boy, I just sigh at some of the methods that people use to try to make and apply it to the Christian church of what the prophets talked about. I have great difficulty with it. And even this text here, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, it's fairly easy here. But there are methods and modes that people use. Oh, I'm sorry, I just can't go there. I have to have a little more connection than what has to have. Maybe it's just my illiteracy or my unlearning that I've not learned how to cheat the gospel in order to make it speak that way. I agree with you, Shane. Absolutely. There's just, and Carol, she knows what I mean. Bob, they know what I'm talking about. There's few people here know what we're talking about without getting into it. The methods and modes in which people do that. So here, according to a Christianized text, it is saying, here is your God or your Lord, and see the sovereign Lord comes with power, and he will rule with a mighty arm. And this is supposed to relate to Christ coming. And the arm is always, the mighty arm of God is always seen as the arm of action. The right hand of God is always the power arm of God, as seen in the Old Testament. That's an illustration of God's might. He uses his right hand to do what he does. If you look out throughout the Bible, you can see examples of the right hand of God. And so he said his mighty arm, his mighty arms, I would say, but here it says arm, and it's more likely referring to his right arm, is going to reach out. And see, his rewards is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. Recompense means to make amends for a loss or a reimbursement. So what I would say here is, if we're going to apply this to Jesus, then Jesus is coming with his recompense or making amends to give to human life. No matter who we are in this life, as humans, we have suffered. There has been great rewards and there has been suffering. If you live a human life, you suffer. I don't care who you are. If you're the richest to the poorest, there is a certain level of suffering that comes with human life. It just does. And so I would take this as a recompense or an amends that Christ is giving to us to compensate us for the suffering in which we have suffered to live this life. Now, there's a whole lot that goes into that that I can't get into, but like where we came from, all that. That's another whole different thing. But Christ is coming and giving to us a recompense, something to make amends. And saying, here, in my loving arms, I'm going to give this to you. And what is that? And I say, it's forgiveness, grace, and mercy. What else can God can be given to us to make us live a better life in the life to come? Judgment and justice does not do it. That's why I'm kind of, the whole justice thing, I'm just like, that's just eye for an eye. That's all that is. It's just trying to equal the scales, which is not it. I don't want God's justice. I want his forgiveness, grace, and mercy. If I get my just due, where would I be? I probably wouldn't get very far. Because if you weigh my good deeds with my bad deeds, I'm afraid I'd probably be lacking quite a bit. The scale would be tipped. So justice would mean I would have to serve for, like in the beginning, your time has been completed, you're done. So I want forgiveness, grace, and mercy. That's what I want. And so his gifts, his recompense, his reward is with him, meaning that his bringing to the world forgiveness, grace, and mercy. And that is for everybody. Paul makes that argument in Romans. I don't care how you read, if you read it all the way through, to at least to chapter 11, he has bound us all over to disobedience, and so he can have mercy on us all. So you can translate that again. If we're going to make translations like people do of a prophecy in the Old Testament, surely I can say that Paul means all people, all humans. I don't think that's too much big of a leap to go. Not at all. Not if you read all the rest of Romans. So he's given it to all. And he said he carries us, he gathers us, he tends his flock like a shepherd. So now we're using terminology that people knew at the time. There was many shepherds that tended their flocks as part of the Christmas story. And a shepherd always took care of his sheep, no matter what. That was the shepherd's livelihood. Why would you not take care of your sheep? So we are being compared to, Christ is being compared as a good shepherd, and we are the lambs. We're not the goats, we're the lambs. Now, goats is another issue. That we are the lambs, and he holds us dear with his arms. Here the arms are plural. He holds us with his arms. That's a loving picture. Here God, he's foretelling Christ coming, and he's going to reach out to humanity and say, forgiveness, grace, and mercy, come to me. I love you very much. I think that's a beautiful picture. Beautiful picture of Christmas. And he says, he gently leads those who have young. The young were women who were the least among in the society. So I take that as meaning even the least amongst us. Jesus reaches out and says, forgiveness, grace, and mercy. I love you. Think of it as a peace, giving us peace as we lit the candle of peace. Amen.
Where we take the offering. For those who are visiting, please feel under no obligation to participate. This service is our gift to you. But for those of you who consider Canoe Camp to be your church home, we want to thank you for your faithfulness to participate financially in the ongoing support of this ministry.
Only one.
things, let your grace flow through us. Generous stream, unstoppable, refreshing, abundant, we release these gifts into your river of love, flowing out to the entire world. Amen.